Having the ability to measure the real impact of policies is a powerful thing. But when it comes to data, most governments in the developing world are flying blind. So what happens when they can actually see an index with some real numbers?
They came back and they said, by the way, we have been thinking that we are doing very well, but if your index is actually looking at that specific aspect, then I can see that we are not doing very well. So the indices are working magic to just show you this is where you are. My name is Rose Ngugi. I'm currently the Executive Director, Kenya Institute for Public Policy, Research and Analysis, KIPRA.
Welcome to the second installment of our special collaborative podcast series with the International Economic Association, where we showcase the economists behind invaluable research in places we don't hear enough about, like Kenya, where Rose Ngugi is empowering local governments with indices.
The data that we are now generating with the indices is very, very crucial. In fact, in one of the counties that we visited, they were like, we need this kind of information so that when we are prioritizing on our annual development plan, we are able to be guided by some statistics.
Other episodes in the series feature Turkish economist İpek İlkaracan on the power of investing in the care economy and Colombian economics professor Marcela Eslava, who looks at Latin America's struggling social security network. IMF podcast contributor Rhoda Metcalf had the privilege of speaking with all three of these exceptional women. This episode features Rose Ngugi from the Kenya Institute for Public Policy, Research and Analysis, or KIPRA, which is, we should mention here, an arm's length public institution.
So when you arrived at your research agency, Kenya was, I guess, 4 years into a big devolution process where a lot of political power was moved from the central government out into the counties. And I know that because of that, you had to steer the research at KIPRA in a very different direction. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. You know, we started the devolved systems of government in 2013. So this has therefore necessitated us to come up with data that can help the counties to look at areas that they need to focus on.
Yeah.
For example, we've come up with what we call the county business environment for micro and small enterprises.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I've looked at this small and micro enterprises project that you have. It's very interesting. It's a county level index, right? I mean, what do you try to capture in this index?
What we look at, critical things, for example, the work site, is it well manned? Is it well are facilitated? Do you have the infrastructure that is required?
Right.
We look at matters of financial access, and we have seen actually very good discussions that we are having with counties because some of them are starting their own initiatives so that they can support the micro and small enterprises at the county level.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that one of the reasons that KIPRA has put so much focus on this particular area is because so many people are employed in this way. So much employment comes out of these small, very, very small businesses.
Yes, about 80%, about 14 million Kenyans are in what they call the informal sector. And the informal sector is actually micro and small enterprises. So it is actually the biggest employer.
By far.
By far, by far.
Because I found it interesting that some of the elements that you put into your index are just daily life stuff. Do they have access to toilets? Do they have access to electricity? I guess it's not just about how much money you're making, but what kind of a life are you living with this kind of a business?
Yeah, it's very true. You see, I may be making 100 shillings. But if I have clean water, so I don't have to move around looking for water.
Right.
If I have a toilet, so I don't have to even pay something so that I can utilize somebody's toilet. If I have internet, which is also free, which means that I don't have to spend a lot, then 100 shillings is enough. But if that is the same one that I have to sacrifice with to ensure that I get access to the utilities, then that becomes a challenge.
Yeah. Sure.
So what the government is trying to do now, and even across the counties, is to set up what they are calling the county industrial aggregation parks, so that you can have a work sites for these micro and small enterprises, but at the same time, you give them an opportunity to access the market, because if they're able to aggregate, if you are all doing tables, I'm doing 5, you're doing 10, the other one is doing 15, if we aggregate them together, we can manage actually to even supply to the government.
Right.
Because the government has opened a platform. It's like a market for these micro and small enterprises.
Okay.
The expectation is that every government agency or department is expected to set aside a specific percentage of their procurement to the youth, small enterprises, and the like.
Right.
So many of them fail or unable to take advantage of that because you see, I'm only able to make 1 chair, 2 chairs. I cannot make the 100 that you're looking at, yeah?
So is that something you follow in the index as well?
Yes, we do. We do ask them how many of them actually are accessing this facility that is provided for by the procurement process.
Must be a lot of work creating an index like that. I mean, if you're looking at hundreds of thousands of tiny businesses, how do you even gather that data?
So we came to realize that micro and small enterprises are organized in associations and they go by sector. So tailors may have their own association, plumbers may have their own association, vegetable dealers may also have their own associations. So we go to the associations that are in an area. Because with the association, you are able then to gather information from a bigger number of the community. Yeah, it's very difficult for you to say that you can move from one enterprise to the other, but through the associations, you are able to get clearly what is going on the ground. So those are the ones that we use.
And this small and micro business index that you've created, this is just one of your indices, because I understand that KIPRA has created several indices at the county level.
Yes. So the micro and small enterprises, that was the very first index. And then we have an index we call the Public Affairs Index. The third one is very new. It's the very first time that we are trying to bring it out, and that is on Climate Change Preparedness Index.
Wow.
There are many initiatives that are coming up. The World Bank actually started with a program even in Kenya. We call it FLOCA. It's supposed to be financing for the local communities, yeah? Initiatives,
right.
As far as climate change is concerned, yeah? And as you know, when we get droughts,
yeah.
We get affected. Like 2021, 2022, we were in a very bad shape as far as drought condition is concerned.
Yeah.
But again, immediately after drought condition, we get these flash floods.
Right.
So what we are therefore asking ourselves is, with all these initiatives that are on the ground, can we say that counties are really preparing themselves when it comes to climate change matters, yeah?
So what are you learning from this new index?
Yes. So we are looking at different aspects. We are, for example, asking the question, do counties really have a kind of a department? Because if you don't have a department that is really focused on climate change matters, then the ownership of climate change becomes an issue. And then we are also asking them about the budget allocation, the policy environment that they are operating with, and then also, how do you involve the communities in different aspects? For example, even in forest management, because you can have a lot of money, but if you're not actually involving the county residents and capacity building them to understand the matters to do with forest management, then it becomes very difficult for you to see the value of the amount of money that you're spending on the ground.
Right.
So all this, when you take it together, is giving us an index that helps us to see the preparedness level for the counties. And because of the World Bank FLOCA project, what you'll notice is that it's like every county has managed to put together a policy, a climate change action policy framework, and also a legislative framework. So it's like everybody is scoring 100%.
Right.
But then when you go to the other nitty-gritties of the implementation, then that becomes a very different matter.
You've really doubled down on using indices as a research method at your organization. Why have you decided to go in that direction?
Thank you very much, Rhoda, for that question. You see, we always say that you can have very good policies, and many of the times you can assume that you are making some progress, you are implementing A, B, C, and D, and therefore you tend to wonder when you see that growth or poverty is not coming down, you always ask yourself, where did I go wrong?
Sure.
So these indices, they are meant actually to support the counties in monitoring the effectiveness of the policies that they have on the ground, and also helping them to really focus their attention to the areas that we see that they are not performing very well. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Recently, we have been disseminating some work on devolution at 10. 10 meaning the first decade, yeah?
First decade of the devolution process.
Yes, yes. So we go to some counties, and the counties would say that as part of devolution, the aspect was actually to bring in public participation. And they say, on the ground, as you are doing very well. Then we give them an index. Then we tell them, actually, you're not doing very well.
Right.
Then we tell them the element that we are looking at is whether you are actually communicating effectively to those you want to have public participation, and whether you are disseminating that information that anybody can have access. And later on, they came back and they said, by the way, we have been thinking that we are doing very well, but if your index is actually looking at that specific aspect, whether we have a good website where we post our information, whether we do it in good time for people to get information, then I can see that we are not doing very well.
Right.
So you see, you come and then and you tell them something that, you know, they are taking it for granted. And they were like, now I have my ICT person here. Now we are going to do it from tomorrow. So the indices are working magic to just show you this is where you are. Yeah.
And I guess it allows you to look to the future and look to improvement over time.
Exactly, because it wakes you up and saying, I need now to look at things differently. I need actually to work harder. Yeah.
So I'm interested to understand a bit more about your background. I know that in the past, you've worked with the Central Bank of Kenya, you've been a university professor, you've also worked at the IMF. So why did you decide to leave that side and join this think tank, KIPRA? What attracted you to the work you're doing now?
So I started at the university. I taught for more than 15 years.
So which university?
University of Nairobi.
Right.
And then I realized that, in as much as we do research at the university, sometimes you don't understand the other side, that is the government side. You are told that you are operating in an ivory tower. So
right.
The first time I had a taste of, government operations is when I was appointed as a member of the Monetary Policy Committee. And that is when I realized that there's a lot that goes on in government, and that if you understand the institution and you work with it, then you can actually see value of what you are doing as far as your research is concerned, in terms of seeing the impact that you can make. So I have also worked with the IMF for 6 years. I was in the executive director's office, the African Group One. And I will tell you, if there is an experience that anybody would want to have, is actually being there.
Really?
Because you see where the rubber meets the road as far as policy international level is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You are at the table. You have the 189 countries to look at. So you are really dealing with the international relations, the geopolitical aspects, mm-hmm. cooperations among countries. So to me, that was a very good exposure. And since I was there in 2010, when the financial crisis had just happened, there was quite a lot of work going on asking the question, how come it was not predicted? You know, there are some countries that really were hit hard. So it was a very good learning process for me. So when I finished my term, I decided to come back home. And I was telling myself, I need somewhere I can still continue interacting with the government and also putting into practice some of the things that I've learned from my exposure, even in IMF. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one thing I wonder about, you know, given the fairly close relationship that your think tank has with the government, is it a bit of a diplomatic balancing act? I mean, because you're trying to keep your research independent, but if you're too critical of government, then you risk offending policymakers who might then, you know, reject your results. How do you present your research in a way that encourages governments to use the information?
Anytime we have an agenda for research, we develop our concepts and we bring stakeholders together. That is government, private sector, if there are other non-state actors, we bring them together. We discuss that concept together and we ask them, mm-hmm. are there things that we might have forgotten, or are there things that you feel we are not approaching effectively? So they'll give us feedback. So we come back and, you know, we do our research work. And then when we have a draft, we have what we call validation workshops. So we go back to them and we tell them this is actually what we got out of it. And what we try to avoid is surprises. So it's at that point that if there are any surprises, then they get to be known. Mm-hmm. And we therefore look for a kind of ownership, because as an institution, the only thing we can do is to evidence. But implementation of what we are pushing in such work comes from the other agencies. So you need to bring them closer to you from the beginning. It's not that they are going to dictate to you what to do, no, but they are going to support you on the way, such that even when there are surprises, they are in the know.
Right. So it's quite a collaborative process.
Yes, it is quite collaborative. So
how do you maintain that independence, though, from the government at the same time, so that your data really is independent and it's not, you know, skewed or pressured by the government?
So what I would say is that we are left to define the research agenda. We are left to design our capacity building activities. And we are left to define the networking and engagements that we need to do. All that we have to ensure is that as we do that, we are aligned to the government development agenda. And I don't think that is too much to ask here.
Right. Mm. Okay.
Yes, yes.
Do you think that there is a particular advantage to having local economists looking at issues in a country? The very fact that you live in Kenya, that you are Kenyan yourself, when you work on economics in Kenya, does it give you advantages?
Yes, to a large extent, in the sense that if you are brought up in a certain system, there are some things that you tend to understand better. There is also that the collaboration that you'd get with the other locals, which helps you to actually get the things done. I think the only thing that we have found is a situation where locals don't have a lot of funding for doing research.
Right.
And therefore, in most of the times, it's either you have a project that is coming from outside. Of course, now, I mean, Kipra is different. But if I'm at the university, the funding for research, we used to get very, very little. It cannot take you very far. So that is the only challenge that local researchers actually get into. And because of the influence of these fundings that are coming from outside, sometimes you lose your focus. Because if today the donor wants you just to do climate change, even if your activities were, say, in a certain area, you actually have to move with that wave. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But collaboration between outsiders and insiders is also crucial, because we may be lagging behind as far as methodological issues are concerned. And so there is a skill that also comes from outside and you are able actually to acquire through collaboration.
Okay. So finally, when you look back over the past 8 years of leading the research at KIPRA, during this period in which decision-making around development has shifted from the central government out into the counties, into the hands of local leaders, do you have a sense that your data and these indices that you created are actually having an impact on the ground in Kenya?
Yes, the data that we are now generating, even with the indices, is very, very crucial. In fact, in one of the counties that we visited, because they prepare every year an annual development plan, they were like, we need this kind of information so that when we are prioritizing on our annual development plan, we are able to be guided by some statistics.
That must be very gratifying for you to see how your data is being used so actively.
Yes, it is. And this is actually generating a lot of conversations with the counties at the moment. Like now, we are going to launch our Kenya Economic Report, our flagship report. But in one of the chapters, we made a deliberate effort to produce county-related products. We were looking at the labor productivity across the counties. And what we have seen is a lot of attention on why counties are not moving, including whether the county itself and its government is actually deriving value for its people with the productivity of its government.
Wow, interesting. Well, Dr. Rose Ngugi, I think that the research work you're doing right now with KIPRA is fascinating and sounds like it's having a real impact. And I thank you so much for agreeing to speak with us today about your work.
Thanks very much, Rhoda. The fact that you gave me a challenge to think about myself made me start thinking. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Rose Ngugi was speaking with Rhoda Metcalf as part of our special collaborative podcast series with the International Economic Association. Look for the other episodes featuring Turkish economist İpek İlkaracan and Colombia's Marcela Slava. To imap.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.